Gorgeous George and Ghost, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Ghost reporting for duty here on a Monday morning. Excited to talk to you for the next hour or so as we discuss the latest in mixed martial arts, maybe a little boxing, you never know. So there's a lot of stuff to cover. Obviously, PFL had their biggest show of the year, and they're coming off their biggest week ever with the acquisition of Bellator. So lots to talk about there. Six new champions. Well, no, I should say four and two back-to-backs. And so, you know, repeat champs, I guess we'd call them, along with a lot of news, some good, some bad. But we're going to cover it all. So let us reset, and then we'll start the show. Because before we get going, man, this thing with Sean Strickland, I want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's part of getting going. Definitely happened.
All over the news a little bit. We already know he's a wild card, right? He's very outspoken. What he did in September was amazing, to shut down a champion like Israel Adesanya. It was really, really like unexpected. So, like, his life's ready to change, and it probably has already changed, I should say. He says he hasn't, in a way, but I still think there's different ways fame can creep up on you without you having to necessarily splurge on a $400,000 car or, you know, a $50,000 watch or whatever. It can still change you. And it sounds like he still goes to the gym and works hard and he needs it, but you know, there's this video of apparently someone in his neighborhood stumbling through, winding up between his two cars in his driveway. And so he comes out. I've only seen each video like 2-3 times, but my first impression goes was it obviously wasn't an attempt to burglarize his home. It looked like he had a set of problems, the bad guy, within the neighborhood or somewhere else. It looked like he was out of breath or whatever, and he just found a place to squat down while he, I don't know, collected himself. You know, I don't know if he was running from someone, hiding from someone, or what, right? And he's hiding between the two cars, but then you see Sean Strickland come out with his gat. You know, he's got his gun, which is fine. You know, you're supposed to protect your property, especially that's what the gun owners believe in, right? But the camera does also tell you a lot. But man, like the way he was holding that out, like I've just seen so many people's lives ruined by making more of a problem than out of something that maybe wasn't there. What did you see in the camera? What did you see in the incident? It didn't look like that other guy was threatening to me.
It was very confusing. Yeah, I wish you can't really tell what that guy's intentions were. But I can't, whatever it was, like, I kind of agree with you. It seemed like he was trying to get away from something else.
And whatever the first video where he winds up between his cars?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever that was, I can assure you, it would not have been as bad as where he ended up. Because gun or no gun, that's still one of the toughest SOBs on the planet. And he just strikes me as a guy that can't wait to prove that to you. So that guy ended up in a really bad spot. But sometimes, like, I don't know, man. I think people, they kind of forget just how much, like, what Sean Strickland has done as of late has been absolutely amazing and probably has changed his life. And think of just all the things. It was Chris Curtis the other day that was talking about. He said he had booked a flight to go to Colorado to train for a couple days. And he said, this is the first time that I've just forgot. Like, normally I would sit there and say, oh my God, how can I afford this? Or what? He's like, I got money. I don't have to worry about that anymore. And I think Sean is in that boat where now he probably doesn't have to worry about a lot of things, but I think they still carry that same mindset from before. And there's just so much on the line. You'd hate for it to all go away over something silly, especially not really knowing what this dude's intentions were or what. I would hate for something like that to happen. And it's crazy, dude. It's crazy to open up social media and see these videos.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate him saying I'm not going to change or whatever, but he does seem more outspoken. And I don't know. The UFC doesn't really muzzle anyone, but I still think there's going to be certain limits. And right now, like it sounded like, if you ever hear him talk about his upbringing, you know, with the father and all that, it just wasn't good. And so he has a chance to turn that around for himself. When he was in Australia, I don't know if this is still the case. He had a bird with him. So maybe this might be a future wife or whatever. And then maybe one day he wants to have kids. So there's got to be a limit to being just you the way you are. Sometimes you got to think about others as well. I don't know. Maybe he's single again. I really don't know, because I haven't seen him in a while, right? But either way, you know, you protect your home. If you're a gun owner, yeah, I suppose you reach for the gun, you come out. But like I say, that guy looked like he was running from something else, and he certainly didn't look like he was there to burglarize. So
we don't know.
Maybe there's more videos. Who knows? Yeah.
That's the whole point, is we don't know. And we have footage, you know, he doesn't know either. That's the whole crazy thing, man. And it's just one little mistake can absolutely change your life. And I hate to see that happen to Sean Strickland, not after everything he's overcome.
Yep. And at the same time, I think you protect your house. You can go outside of your house, but outside of your house, you don't know if that guy's also got a gun or if he's with two others that might have guns. I don't know. I would say protect your house for sure. Leaving like that, I think he knew that other guy wasn't a threat, but it was just, I guess, maybe testosterone coursing through his veins. And but so I think if I saw a guy like that, I could go out there and not have to worry about, at least from what I saw, that if I'm just gonna tell him, you know, get out of here or whatever, what are you doing on my property, without that type of aggression, I suppose.
I think a lot of it is it's like when you go to your first boxing class or your first jiu-jitsu class, you just can't wait to show everyone what you've learned and use your tools, right? I bet you some of it's that. You know, you have these guns that you've been storing or whatever, and you just kind of can't wait to flex a little bit. Probably a little bit of that too.
Yeah. All right. So PFL had their biggest week ever. They acquired Bellator last week. We've talked about it on Spinning Backclick last week, a little bit this week. We taped a few minutes ago. Well, we were live, actually. And then we talked about it on our second show during the week. You've heard our takes. We love it. But now we got to see a little bit more from them having their championship week this past Friday in Washington, D.C. We'll get to the fights in just a second, but what did you think of that feel goes of having a few Bellator champs there present, like Jason Jackson, Patricio Frady? They were there to pose off against the new PFL champions. Ryan Bader, he zoomed in, you know, and talked about the possibility of fighting Fajeda or Francis Ngannou. The way this thing is kind of heading, I guess, are you kind of more excited than you were when you heard the announcement?
Yeah. I think that was an excellent move for them to do. Like, there's so many models of back in the day to follow, you know, especially pro wrestling, right? When WCW came to WWE or ECW, all that stuff. You have to remember, like, I know a lot of people were like, well, how come these guys weren't there? How come, you know, Don Davis explained, like, this happened at the beginning of the week, you know, and some fighters were just unavailable. So the effort that they made and the people that they got, I thought was really cool. Just the image of Pinedo and Pitbull, that just plants that seed for you to want to see that fight, so many cool things. And I expect them to keep doing that. That's the thing about PFL, is they just seem like they want to stand out. I think they understand where they're, what their place is right now. And I don't, you know, you have to say things like, we're going to compete with UFC. You have to say it. Can they? I don't know. But the one thing that they have shown is that they're willing to kind of look and think outside the box. And I thought that was really cool and very smart of them to bring these fighters out.
Yeah. I mean, it gets you excited about the possibilities. Not only do they have their biggest fight card of the year, you have a few fighters that have become multiple champs. One fighter that became a champ, I guess you could say, or as best as you can do that in a regular season playoff format. And then you got the free agent signing of Ngannou and the possibilities there, and obviously a $2 million payday for his future opponent. But yeah, bringing in all those Bellator guys, and then there's a lot of great Bellator fighters that don't have belts, like former champions Pettis and Amosov, starting with them, right? You got old school guys like a Gegard Mousasi, if he still has any gas left in the tank. I don't know, because they got to. I'd like to see PFL bring back the middleweight division. They had it for one season, and they haven't brought it back since then. You know how I feel about the bantamweights, and Bellator has bantamweights. They just had a solid Grand Prix. So there's just so many things that didn't even get talked about, much less what we saw with our own eyes, champions facing off against each other. And then you think about Pico, McKee, you know, some of the other names that they have there.
Jeremy Kennedy. There's so many.
It gets you excited about next season. The only thing we don't know is, what do we get excited about? The regular season? Are some of these fighters going to be put in that? Or are they going to be part of like some sort of an arena series? We know there's two pay-per-views. And that's fine. I don't mind paying for two pay-per-views. I don't love it, but I'll do it. But what else is going to happen? And that intrigues me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit. There's so much that I enjoyed about Bellator. I loved the Grand Prix. I wish there was a way to kind of keep that going. I still am a fan of the seasons that PFL has. And I think with the influx of talent, some of those names that maybe aren't champions that we brought up would spice things up a little bit, because with PFL, you have so many fighters that have kind of already fought each other. This, I think, might help. So you have your Grand Prix, you have your season format, and then you have these pay-per-views that they're going to put on. Like, I think you have a solid game plan. It's just how you execute it, right? There's so many things up in the air right now. Francis Ngannou, Kayla Harrison. There's a lot of things that we just don't really know exactly what's going to happen. But I do feel like they're going to make it interesting for us.
I think what they should do is the regular season. I can appreciate that in 1 year to the next, there's new champions. I really can. But I think it's pretty taxing. And I do like Bellator's Grand Prix, even though they take about a year and a half to get through them, the champions defending along the way. What I'd like to see is a regular promotion with regular matchups that lead to a title fight. But as that's happening, just like Bellator used to do it, have one of the weight classes be starting a Grand Prix while one's ending a Grand Prix. And there's your $1 million paydays. So fighters still have that incentive, you know, the ones that have already been there or the ones that have tasted a Grand Prix in any way. I think that would be pretty cool. And then the rest of the divisions can just kind of do their thing. I'll give you an example. So in 2024, I'd like to see them go, well, we don't have middleweight or bantamweight, so we're gonna do a Grand Prix. Now they just had the bantamweight, so I can wait on that one. But let's get a middleweight going. Let's get a middleweight going with Shoeface, who used to fight as a middleweight in the UFC. Now he's a light heavyweight. Impa Kasanganai, same thing. Johnny Evelyn, Gegard Mousasi. You know, and that there's four more. We'll say, right. I would love to see them do that. Grand Prix style, $1 million to the winner. But then all the other divisions can just kind of have regular matchups along the way, however they see fit. And then at some point in late 2024, as the middleweight Grand Prix is winding up, then maybe we do a bantamweight Grand Prix to introduce that weight class. Maybe Patchy Mix doesn't even have to be in it, to tell you the truth. Maybe he just chooses to fight the 45-pound champion at PFL, trying to become a champ, or maybe you just give him a solid matchup along the way. He gets the winner, I suppose. Maybe he automatically becomes the PFL champion. They don't even do a Grand Prix. I don't know, but maybe they can get that one going as the other one's winding down. I love tournaments. I think they're pretty cool, and I think there's always usually a right time for one, but it doesn't have to be every year.
Yeah, they have to be special. That's what made them stand out back in the day. You know, if you try and force it down people's throat, it's not going to feel the same. It has to be those special types of tournaments. So I agree with that.
Yeah, and you want people to usually be excited about your biggest product, which is for them the regular season and playoff, except I think these pay-per-views and arena series are going to wind up just being bigger, you know, and you're not tied to, oh, it has to go down in October. I mean, you can honestly be doing something in October, in November, in December, whenever you please. I mean, the PFL hasn't done a show in, I think the last three championships have been in October. So they haven't done a card in November, December, January, February, or March in years. Now the off season's pretty cool. I'm sure the staff enjoys it or whatever. But you know, MMA is kind of a year round sport. And remember, they're absorbing a whole Bellator roster of fighters that were also used to that, not just the April through October grind that we've seen with the PFL. So I think you can do a mix of both of them. But look, let's talk about the fight card itself. It was six titles that were on the line. We'll start with the first one, which wasn't on the pay-per-view. It was Jesus Pinedo defeating Gabriel Alves Braga. He gave Braga his first loss. Braga's the guy that came through the Challenger Series this year. So this was actually his fifth fight of the year. And Braga defeated Pinedo earlier in the year. But Pinedo got his revenge. He wins in the third round via TKO. And he's a new millionaire. So congrats to the Peruvian. What'd you think of that fight?
Dude, I thought that was, I mean, I just think the year in general, we touched on this a little bit on Spinning Backlick, but the dude left no questions whatsoever that you could even ask about him. Like, finishes, he avenged the loss along the way. He has a swag to him. He made $1 million. Like, there's just so much about him to like that I don't know how anybody could have a problem with this guy. That was a great performance and a great year for him.
I think the UFC is going to regret having cut him or whatever, because I know
he only had two fights, right?
Yeah. But this dude, I just really enjoy watching him fight, man. He makes the fights exciting. So we'll see. We'll see what the future is for Pinedo. But he's a world champion right now of a major organization, and he's $1 million richer. And in Peru, $1 million is about almost 4 million soles, and that's a lot of money, goes.
$1 million is four. Isn't it more?
No, it's 4 to 1. So 4 million soles is $1 million. Well, it's a little less than that. Actually, it's like 3.775 to every dollar. Sometimes it was getting as high as 3.85 when I was there. So I just rounded up to 4, but it's about 3,750,000 soles.
Wow. You do a lot with that.
For sure. Congrats to Jesus Pinedo. Capped off a wonderful season. And then we get to another matchup that took place before the pay-per-view started. And, you know, with all the title fights, Derek Brunson beat Ray Cooper III. And this was a debut for Derek Brunson. They fought at middleweight. Ray Cooper's a former welterweight champ. He took the year off. Brunson got the unanimous decision here. So if they don't have a middleweight division going forward, Brunson's going to be a 205er.
Mm-hmm. That fight was interesting. You know, he did get caught at one point. He says it didn't rock him, but to me, it looked like it did kind of rock him. But overall, it was just a dominant performance. And when you look at what he did, you have to question, like, what would elbows do? You know, there were certain situations where you just felt like he could have just unleashed hell with some elbows and probably finished Ray Cooper. But that's something that I think needs to get talked about a little bit. But what do you do with the guy? Like, to me, man, PFL, like, you just got to make him and Johnny Eblen happen and then let Derek Brunson do whatever it is he needs to do. But that fight has to happen. And they even talked at each other a little bit at the event. It wasn't anything out of line. You know, it was more like a let's make that money type thing. But I agree. Make that money. I think that's a good fight. The guys that we want to see the most from Bellator are the guys that don't have really a home or a place in PFL right now. And that's Johnny Eblen and Patchy Mix. I think we have to figure those out. And I love Derek Brunson, but to me, I'm just not interested in light heavyweight. But man, a fight with Johnny Eblen, I'm down with that.
Yeah, I mean, their last two champs are former middleweights, so I don't think he'd be a fish out of water, but I think you just need to have a middleweight division. So I think this is a good time to start one because you have Eblen, and then you have a high-profile guy like Brunson who didn't win a title in the UFC, but he's got a lot of skins on his wall. So I think you could do something. Maybe it's a fearsome foursome tournament or who knows what, but I think he could start something, and I would love to see that matchup. I agree with you there. I think Josh Silvera and Impa Kasanganai could both stand a drop to 185, to tell you the truth. But because I'm just thinking, I've seen that Vadim Nemkov, and he's a monster. He's going to be way bigger than Kasanganai or Silvera. But, you know, that's next year. Kayla Harrison took about a year off. It's been about a year since she lost to Larissa Pacheco. And she didn't participate in the regular season, but she came back against Aspen Ladd at 150 pounds. Man, dude, she looked good. I'm not saying Aspen Ladd is a world beater, but she held her own in the UFC. She's come over to Bellator and done well for herself there. But Harrison just made it look like they didn't belong, you know, in the same sentence. Like, she really, really dominated her.
I think this is something that wasn't talked about enough. And even on the last show that we just did on Spinning Backclick, we really didn't touch on this aspect of the conversation. And that's Kayla Harrison looked like she made a huge jump in her game. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was confidence. I think it was a little bit of confidence, a little bit of timing. I thought she just was always one step ahead of Aspen Ladd. And even when Aspen Ladd was able to kind of get a nice little sweep and reverse positions, Kayla just countered right away. Like, she had a very good fight IQ. Everything blended well for this fight.
She looked athletic too.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that's always been on, if her and Cyborg fought, I just felt like Cyborg would beat her. Like, she just didn't seem ready. But to me, this Kayla Harrison, and if she can make another improvement in between that time, now you got something going here. This Kayla Harrison, if she can make this type of improvement in her striking as well, man, that's going to be something really to look out for. Really, really interesting. Props to her. Great performance. Aspen Ladd tried to give her hell, but she just couldn't. She was on the defensive the whole time.
She is just so strong and physically imposing. It looked like a linebacker or a lineman trying to take down a quarterback, and she was doing it. But, you know, you keep waiting for those judo throws, and she had some really nice tosses. I mean, Aspen flew in the air a couple times, but really her wrestling was very impressive, man. She was shooting nice doubles, and then her ability to maximize her time, you know, on the ground. Yeah, Aspen did find her way back to her feet, but she just kept getting put back there. She's very cat-like and quick during her scrambles. Her hands have definitely improved. But, I mean, God, at 145 pounds, I think she's going to be even quicker. That time off really did her well. Very, very impressed with Kadzinganu. Oh, sorry, with Kayla Harrison. Can't wait to see her against the Kadzinganu or Leo McCourt, since it sounds like Don Davis is leaning towards Cyborg versus Larissa Pacheco, saying, I want champions versus champions. That kind of does leave Harrison out. But he did promise he does want to give Harrison two big fights, and he doesn't want to take it easy on her, because I think he's looking at Harrison fighting the winner of Pacheco and Cyborg later in the year, I guess. And then in the early part of the year, he'd like to give her someone.
You know, I think Kadzinganu is the obvious name that should be thrown out there, but I don't think that's a good idea, dude. Just business-wise, That is a very, very close matchup, in my opinion. And what you really want to do is figure out a way to preserve that fight with Cyborg. So I think maybe you do go Leah McCourt instead. I would be scared.
I think Leah's tougher.
You think so?
Yeah, and I'm not just saying it because she just beat Zingano, but she's big, man. She's got a big frame to her, and she's just strong. And I think Kat is an outstanding bantamweight. And look, she went 4-0 before losing to McCourt, but a couple of those were split decisions. They were close calls. I just think that McCourt is a tougher matchup for I mean, and Zingano is getting older as well. So I misspoke. McCourt lost to Zingano, but then beat Sarah McMahon. But I think that Zingano fight was very, very close. And like I say, I just think she's gotten better. What do I know? I mean,
so those are the three names that need to be involved, though, right?
Yeah.
Sarah McMahon, Kat Zingano, Leah McCourt. I started thinking about this a little bit. If one of the two lost, if Cyborg lost against Pacheco, or if Kayla Harrison lost against whoever they put in front of her, what about this? Do we give a shit? Like, wouldn't we still want to see them fight anyway? Like, is it that big of a deal?
Well, that's kind of what I was saying on Spinning Back Click. When Nunes lost to Pena, and then she won the title back, it didn't take away from me wanting to see Nunes versus Cyborg again, or Nunes versus Harrison. But it's because they're all great, great fighters. However, with Harrison and Cyborg, let's say Pacheco beat Cyborg. I'll watch part four of Pacheco versus Harrison again. Not that there's bad blood, but Pacheco's kind of matched Kayla in terms of not popularity, but accomplishments. She's a two-time champion, right? However, Harrison versus Cyborg would be big, even if Cyborg lost to Pacheco, just because Cyborg and Harrison have talked so much shit, you want to see it get settled.
Right.
So I think you can take the risk. You know, that's the one way of thinking. The other way of thinking is, what if Cyborg and Harrison win their fights, and then now that fight's even bigger? I don't know. I wouldn't be too scared to match them up separately. A lot of people will say jump on it now. It's too big of a fight to get away from. Make some exceptions, kind of like what they've done with Francis. But what I did like about Don Davis is he attacked it right away. And instead of leaving us wondering, he said, nope, this is the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to reward our champions versus those champions, which to me tells me Fajeda versus Bader, we can hold them to that because that's a champion versus champion. And going forward, we'll always lean back towards that comment and say, nope, that's the way Don Davis rolls, which kind of gives them the out to do Ngannou versus Fury. What I don't want to see is Ngannou box Fury, or sorry, Wilder. Not right away. I want to see him do an MMA fight because we're pushing 2 years since he's fought MMA.
Well, and I want to know what the hell these mixed rules are, because at the very least, he's got to be able to kick. You know, I could see, all right, no takedowns. I get that. I would say takedowns are fair.
I don't want to see that. Do you? I just want to see straight MMA.
You want him to fight Deontay Wilder in straight MMA?
Yeah, and then if he wants to box him, straight boxing, just like what he did with Fury. He went to Fury and said straight boxing, and they did.
I'd love to see that, but I just don't think that'll happen. I think Deontay Wilder would be a madman to take that fight.
I agree.
But if you're going to do mixed rules, I would say, hey, look, takedowns, but, you know, the old Butterbean rule. Can't be on the floor for more than 5 seconds or 10 seconds or whatever the hell that was. Something like that, because that takedown does kind of change. It does give the MMA guy a little bit more of the advantage that he deserves. It's in a cage. It's not in the ring, right? In the boxing ring, Francis Ngannou didn't get that many things in his favor. All right, he didn't have to go 12 rounds, but still, dude, like, it's always in their favor. So I would say something like that. But yeah, the second he lands that first kick or something, it's just a different game. But if mixed rules is just like, well, they're fighting, but with just small gloves, they're boxing with small gloves, like, to me, that's not really, you might as well just put boxing gloves on at that point.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't think Wilder's a bum if he got his ass kicked by Ngannou. That's for sure. I'd appreciate it. And then hopefully Ngannou would want to return the favor. But as far as I know it, Ngannou's an MMA guy. He's with PFL now. They allowed him to box. He did. He did way better than anyone thought. Therefore, we're willing to see it again. But I don't want this guy to just turn into a boxer either. Now, I suppose if he had beaten Fury for the belt, which there wasn't a belt on the line, but let's just say he had, well, then I would understand he wants to defend and all that stuff going forward. But who knows? Who knows how this thing plays out? Right now, it's either, hey, Wilder, you nut up and fight MMA, and we'll send Ngannou to box you. We won't ask for special rules either, and let's see how that goes. But yeah, I liked Rotang and Demetrius the way they mixed up their rules. That was fun, you know, if they wanted to do that. But I think that would be kind of awkward to, in between rounds, okay, take off these gloves and put on those gloves, and you know. But anyway, all right. Moving on, PFL, we go to Impa Kasanganai defeated Josh Silvera, went the full 25 minutes. Silvera just couldn't get going, his wrestling. You know, this guy's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He wrestled in college, but he just couldn't take Kasanganai down. When he did, it was either because Kasanganai slipped or Kasanganai pulled guard, or maybe he did take him down, but regardless, he couldn't keep him down. He really couldn't get going on the damage. Now, towards the end of the fight, he got a little bit more confidence in his hands. Some of it was working, but I think by then, Kasanganai had, he banked so many rounds. It was just a matter of not getting caught, and he was going to win a title, and he did.
Yeah, that's, of all the fights that weekend, that one was the oddest, because for me, I think Impa has made improvements in his game. But I don't know that he's like a world beater or anything, man. He just made $1 million. Like, his story is pretty phenomenal, the way he's been able to turn around his life and make such a big paycheck that he probably wouldn't have gotten in the UFC. So props to him. But I felt like of all the fights, that one, I didn't enjoy that one as much.
It dragged on for sure. The only thing that made it compelling was at the end, Silvera was landing a bit, but man, the commentators kept making such a big deal out of Impa not breathing out of his mouth and in such great shape, and noted, I get it, that dude's jacked, you know, and Joe Rogan stuck it in our heads 15 years ago that the more jacked you are, the harder it is to feed those muscles oxygen, but man, there's been a few guys that are jacked that can do it, and so we haven't heard that as much lately, but it was impressive that he wasn't even laboring at all. I mean, this guy just, if you're Josh Silvera, you're thinking, dude, I'm hurting over here, and this guy, no problem. That had to be a little intimidating. But yeah, the fight, it didn't deliver, unfortunately.
Nah.
Magomed Kerimov, he won a title again. This is the second one. He defeated Sadibusi. This fight was kind of boring as well, but Magomed Kerimov got the submission in round three, a guillotine choke. Congrats to him. He's actually pretty good at it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's what was Mike Bond saying on Spinning Back Click? Like, that's the biggest gap between winning seasons or something like that.
And he boasts like a 14-1 PFL record. It's one of the better PFL records too.
He's pretty amazing, dude. He really is. He doesn't really leave you with that feeling like, I want to see him again, the way some of these other guys have, but I enjoyed him. I enjoy him as a fighter. I think it's a good name. I think it's a good something for the PFL to boast about.
Yeah, and two things. He actually fought for them when they were WSOF. That's what they were before they were PFL. And he's also beaten Ray Cooper III, who is a champion, and, you know, I think he's one of the top guys over at PFL. John Howard, he was in the UFC for a few years. I think two different stints. Chris Curtis, he's another guy that he beat before Chris Curtis went to the UFC and became a middleweight. Curtis Millender, he's a UFC veteran. Sadibusi, who Sean Strickland says is the best guy he's ever sparred. and he's a former champ. So this guy, oh, Gleason Tabao is another guy. This guy's actually beaten some formidable competition along the way.
Yeah, that's decent.
Yeah. We move on. So that's your, let's see, what have we covered so far? We got the featherweight champ, Pinedo. Brunson beat Cooper in a intro to the PFL matchup for Brunson. Kayla defeated Aspen Ladd. That was just the regular, what do you call it? Catch weight, 150 pounds. Two veterans mixing it up. Kasim Ghanai, though, is a light heavyweight champ. Magomed Kerimov is a welterweight champ. Larissa Pacheco is now their 145-pound champion. So it's their second title in two different weight classes. She defeated Marina Mokhnatkina. And it didn't go the way anyone thought. All right. She had to fight off some leg attacks and stuff like that. But she just couldn't. I wouldn't say she couldn't lay her hands on her because Pacheco hit her pretty hard a few times. She just couldn't finish her.
Yeah. When you think about it, though, like, think about the position she's in now. You know, Dawn Davis all but the thing is, we really don't know too much about Dawn Davis. He's not really out in the public too much, but I do enjoy when he talks. And if he's a man of his word, then you have to look at what Pacheco's done in the last couple of years. And she's made $2 million. She's put herself in a position for a giant fight with Chris Cyborg, which I think is going to happen. I mean, he made it sound like that's just the play, regardless of what you, me, and all these other Muppets are saying that Kayla is the bigger fight. We all get that. But if the dude sticks to his word and that's what's going to happen, this is going to be absolutely massive for Larissa Pacheco. But this fight did not really help me wanting to see the Cyborg fight. You know, if she would have gone out there and just mopped the floor, I would have thought, well, all right, you know, we're eventually going to get this Kayla fight. This should do, you know, this should be interesting, but it didn't really leave me wanting that.
Yeah, it sucks because the first fight of the year, which was against Julia Budd, and you and I were there, she decisioned her, right? Okay, mm-hmm. But she still beat a former Bellator featherweight champ. Then she got two finishes, early first round stoppages, Amber Liebrock and Olena Kolesnik. So that was huge. But then this fight, I think we were expecting the same thing. Hell, there was times where she was fighting off submissions to the leg or getting taken down. So she just couldn't get going. And but yeah, had she starched her, then I think we'd be even more excited about her next matchup, whether it's Cyborg or whatever, just because, you know, it keeps the train going a little bit. But it's tough. You know, sometimes it's just the finish isn't there. But look who she's beaten. She's beaten Bud, former Bellator featherweight champ. Kayla Harrison, former two-time PFL lightweight champ. And then she's beaten Sarah Kaufman, former Strikeforce bantamweight champion. So, like, she's got some decent wins. Imagine Irene Aldana, she beat her in Jungle Fight years ago. Imagine if she can beat Cyborg and be able to boast beating Harrison. That would be tremendous for Pacheco. She also lost twice to Harrison, but I'm just talking about the last fight. It went her way, but that's quite a resume she's put together.
Yeah, I mean, she got the last laugh, so everything's in her favor right now.
Yeah, exactly. All right, continuing on here, co-main event. Henan Fajeda defeated Dennis Goldsloff. Look, these were two big dudes, 6'8 against 6'6. You just kind of had the feeling it would go this way. But yeah, Henan Fajeda, man, he was slick in round two. He caught him with the punch and followed it up with some ground and pound. And Fajeda gets the $1 million and possibly the $2 million fight against Francis Ngannou. But as we've previously discussed, Ngannou might be an exception, you know, to the rule. He may have other fish to fry. What I can tell you is if Davis follows his format, Fajeda may have just earned a shot against Ryan Bader.
I think that's what's going to happen. I feel like Francis Ngannou, he's not that he plays by his own rules, but he's just kind of off to the side. You know, I don't know that we can hold him to all this stuff. I think that's the right thing to do is do Fajeda and do Bader. Mm-hmm. And then Francis Ngannou, have him fight Deontay Wilder. And whoever comes out of that heavyweight fight, that's who Francis Ngannou fights. I think that's fair. I think that's interesting. We'll see what can happen in that time frame as well. You know, maybe the PFL goes out and gets another heavyweight, somebody like a Ben Rothwell or someone like that, that can be waiting in the wings. But I think that's kind of like the timeline of what probably makes the most sense.
I would love for Ngannou to make up time because he's going on 2 years without fighting MMA. I'd love to see him fight Wilder. I think that'll be a layup in MMA. And I'd love to see him fight either the winner of Fajita versus Bader, which would allow Don Davis to say, see, we stick to the plan, champs versus champs, you know, merit versus politics over here. And but yeah, I'd love to see an outside the box big name. Now, JDS is a little older, to be fair, so is Rothwell. But Verdum, I think, is 46 or 47. So that one might be way, way out there. And plus, they're doing some heavy testing now. So that physique you see on Verdum that we saw recently against JDS over at Masvidal's fighting promotion, I don't know that you'd get that at PFL. But I would love to see him run off like four fights in 2 years and, you know, solidify his status as a great, great MMA heavyweight champ. And then along with that little side piece we'll call the event versus Fury, right? That guy would have a lot to be proud of, man, in his career. And he'd be 1-1 against Miocic. He just will not have fought John Jones. But John Jones is the greatest of all time. He's the greatest light heavyweight of all time. But he hasn't proven to me that he's the greatest heavyweight of all time. So I think if he misses out on Jones, I think we can all live with it. I wouldn't want that. But I'm glad he got to fight Miocic twice, because at least that's one of the guys that we say, that could be the best ever.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, like for me, my position has always been it's John Jones that needs to fight Francis Ngannou, not the other way around. Francis Ngannou was the baddest man on the planet. We still consider him to be that. You need to go and take that from him. It's John Jones that needs to come after him. What Francis Ngannou has been able to accomplish as far as like money-wise, if all of this hits, is going to be huge. And I just hope that he'll have that same motivation because, you know, we see when fighters start to make a little bit more money, it's a little bit more difficult to get up and train. And especially when you're getting some of these names and people are saying, well, Ryan Bader's not up to your level, your par, you know, Henan Ferreira. He's not up to your level. I don't know. He doesn't seem like the type of guy that would slack off, but it's always a concern.
Yeah. The year's over, and I think a lot of decisions are going to surprise us. I mean, they've done a good job just with free agency alone, right? And Bellator is pretty much their free agency, but there might still be another name or two. And then them deciding how they're going to do regular fight cards, pay-per-views, all that. I'm really, really excited. And then in the last fight, Olivier Aubin-Mercier versus Clay Collard. Yeah, it sucks because Collard's fights are awesome, right? But who wants to stand with him? You know, Olivier Aubin-Mercier knew that going to the ground was probably his best bet. And he did it. And it looked like it took every ounce of energy to get out of there with the title. But he does. He can leave on a win if he chooses for this to be his last fight. I'm still down to watch Clay Collard fight. You could tell he's worked on his takedown defense, his ability to get up. He's just having to come up against a really, really strong cat in OAM who is methodical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had his moments. Like, I don't know about you, but I kind of felt like, for as well conditioned as OAM is, I felt like towards the end he was kind of fading. And I don't know that it's a knock on his conditioning. I just think it's the pace that Clay Collard keeps. He just doesn't stop, dude. He's a little bit of a Terminator out there. It's so unfortunate because Clay Collard really turned around his career. It's so unfortunate that he's just run into this brick wall over and over again. OAM has just proven he's the best one there at 155 in PFL. But the fight itself had its moments. I think there were some moments where you felt like Clay might be squeaking out some rounds, and even times where he did connect, going to the body was nice. But it's the OAM show, man. You know what he's gonna do. He's just that good at it.
Is he better than Rory McDonald?
he's getting close, dude. He really is. Like, it's just
he's a PFL champ, and he was a respectable UFC guy. Roy McDonald was a title challenger at the UFC, but not a champ. But he was a champ at Bellator. It might be tough because McDonald is the more popular name. He has a Hall of Fame fight, so that one might be tough. But you know, Canada, I don't think has a Mount Rushmore, but we usually just say that regardless. We say Mount Rushmore is of hamburgers for crying out loud. I'm sure we can do it with Canadian fighters. He's for sure in that. It would be GSP, Rory, OAM, and then it'd be up for debate who else had a great enough career that we plugged them in. Mm-hmm. But is he better than McDonald? I thought about it, man. I almost felt like I wanted to, you know, argue the case that he is, but I just don't think he is. I think McDonald had some bigger names. Not, it wasn't just a popularity contest. He just had some bigger names, and I think he's deserving of holding on to that number two spot.
I think OAM can take it.
If OAM comes back and wins the third one, for sure, I think he takes it. If he comes back and just has like one or two great fights, we'll see. But
I think it's possible.
I think right now McDonald's still holding him off. So that was your PFL card, folks. Biagio Ali Walsh, who I think is going to be pretty good. I wasn't buying into him originally. I just thought they were making a bigger deal out of him because of the heritage of Muhammad Ali, local Vegas guy, played football at Bishop Gorman. But no, man, this guy's really, really good. A hell of an athlete. And so far he's panning out. So I almost see him as maybe what Bellator did with AJ McKee. Just we're going to take it slow and we'll see what happens. But he did get a win on this fight card. The place looked full. According to Mike Bond, it was. They were boasting a sellout, so that's cool. And now they're off until their Challenger Series. I think it comes back in February, which not too many people get excited about. You can't really put it on the level of Dana White Contender Series. Mm-hmm. And then their Arena Series comes back in either late March or early April. But that's PFL's thing, you know. They get in your way 3 weeks in a row in April, 3 weeks in a row in June, 3 weeks in a row in August, then one time in October, and then they're out of your life. So as a consumer and as someone who covers the sport, I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah. I do want to ask you one thing that we didn't touch on with Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison's going to be a free agent here at the end of the year. And it seemed like the last time she tested free agency, the UFC just wasn't really interested. You know, the offer that they gave her. Remember, she makes a lot of money at PFL. But could the UFC be a little bit more interested now?
No.
Not? Huh?
Oh, sorry. I thought that was the question.
Because you don't think maybe there's a little piece of Dana White that just wants to sting the PFL for taking Francis Ngannou? Just knowing, you know, all right, what if we pay this girl a little bit more than we think she's worth, but we just rob the PFL of that big fight in the process? I'm wondering if that's not it. Now, Kayla Harrison in her interview with Mike Bond, she says it's not really about money now. She's like, I got money. It's more about status and just the career, which would make you think maybe she would want that cyborg fight. But I was curious if the UFC wouldn't consider maybe pulling the steel just to kind of sting their new rival, kind of remind them who's boss.
I wouldn't put it past the UFC, and only because they've done something like that in the past. It's been done to them. They've done it. But here's the problem. If they sign Kayla Harrison, they'll double their featherweight stable. They literally only have like one or two chicks. So there's like nowhere to put her other than to say, we'll just come up with fun fights for you at some point, but they'll have to get more gals involved. I think if anything, they're doing away with 145. And just focusing on, I'd really like them to try Adam Weight and see how that goes. I think there could be some exciting fights there. But yeah, I just don't think the division works. That's the problem. But Kayla fits in nicely with what the UFC's trying to do, but it's just too bad she's not a bantamweight, man.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go through some of the news that's here and then we'll bounce on out. Did you see that cameraman that got stuck in the cage when the fight started?
That was hilarious, dude.
So if I'm the promoter, I tell the cameraman, you're an idiot. Let's start with that. Right. However, then I would turn to the ref and say, I think you're the bigger idiot, because how did you not clear all this before this guy could get out? You know, it was funny watching it and then having to see the guy bounce through and he had his whole cord and everything. But I just think the ref's not asked to do much in terms of pre-fight. It's just like, are you ready? Are you ready? And then some of them go through are the judges or the scorekeeper. But it seems like it's pretty easy to figure out there's only supposed to be three of us here. How did he miss that guy, right? Now, I'm not trying to take any blame away from the cameraman. He should have known better. But who knows if someone spoke in his ear and said, oh, don't worry, the ref's going to give you the signal. Stay in there as long as you can. You know, I don't know. But either way, man, I just saw two morons. It was hilarious, though. I literally laughed.
Got to be three. What about the guy that actually closes the cage? You didn't see anything wrong with that scenario? Like, how do you put that? I've been there. It's usually two locks, one on top and one on the bottom. You didn't think that was weird that there was a cable underneath your feet and there was a fourth guy in the cage with a giant camera? Like, I think there were three idiots that night.
If he was focused on the lock, maybe he just didn't see him. But yeah, you're right. Why? How did he not see it? I don't know. I still think the ref's the biggest moron out of all of them, but the cameraman's a close second. That was pretty funny. A few other things here. Aaron Blanchfield expects Manon Fiorot to be next because we got to do the Grasso-Shevchenko fight, right? Mm-hmm. And with Talia Santos experiencing a loss, it was kind of like that was that third flyweight that I thought was going to be, you know, the future, we'll say, right? Not to take anything away from the real future, which is Macy Barber. But she took a loss recently. So it's now these two. I don't know, Goz. I don't want to see them fight each other. I'd rather see Grasso have at least a few bodies lined up. Shevchenko, okay, who's next? I don't want to take away one of these two by having them fight each other.
Yeah, I agree. Anytime you have one of those situations, I think you want to make sure they go through both. But at the end of the day, it is a compelling matchup.
And it is.
That's what the sport's about, right?
It is. If they make it, we'll live with it. But, you know, there's something to be said for, like, one could say, hey, Volkanovski cleared out the division. Well, I suppose, but he also fought Max three times. And he got the Korean Zombie once when really it was supposed to be someone else. Like, did he really? I mean, of course I think he's great. But it seemed like they matched up other guys against each other. And guys like Arnold Allen and Yair and Calvin Kattar and Dan Ige and they were all busy taking each other out. And the next thing you know, it did look like he cleared out the division, but it was really people underneath just all kind of clearing each other out. I remember Giga was on a roll for a while. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, there just really wasn't anyone. Luckily, Topuria came charging through. And so he's a clear cut number one. But after Topuria, who's next? I mean, that's a tough question to answer. Emmett got taken out. There's so many of them that have been on a roll. And the gatekeepers, you know, do the taking out. But that's what I don't want here. I want for Grasso or Shevchenko, the winner, to be asked, what's next for you? Well, there's someone that's been chirping over here, and it's so-and-so, you know, and then you take her out or you fight her and then see what happens. But I kind of like it when there's a little bit more of that.
Did you see Topuria punch a fan?
No.
Oh, he leveled some dude. I mean, where? Let me clear this up. The fan asked him to punch him. And,
oh, please tell me it was to the body at least.
Yeah, it was to the body. I think it was to the liver. But the guy folded, dude. It was a good shot.
Will it ever beat Slick Rick the Fish getting slugged by Frank Trigg at a Junkie Gathering?
Be worse than that?
Yeah.
Oh. It'd be tough.
Didn't you say he got folded in like a chair, like a folding chair?
Oh, yeah. He completely just folded to the floor. But I always tell people.
He was skinny and drunk, too, so it probably looked even funnier.
Yeah, Trigg didn't really give him too many, like, are you sure? But the sound was the sound of when you remember when you kicked that exercise ball over at Tough Prince.
Mm-hmm.
That noise, that's at what it Bradbury? Sounded like. Yeah, that was the noise that happened when Trigg hit him in the body.
Was it me kicking the ball or the ball hitting that garage door? Or
no, door? You hitting the ball. You know that like thump sound? Mm-hmm. That's what came out of his body.
That's funny. All right, a couple other things here. Cormier is saying Islam Makhachev has a chance to run the gauntlet in 2024. So what's the gauntlet, right? I guess the gauntlet would be Oliveira first. And then Gaethje, because he's a VMF guy, and the winner of that fight was supposed to have a say in the matter. And then after that, then I suppose whoever's hot coming out of that. I don't know if it's a Chandler McGregor winner, if it's a Poirier, if he gets back in the win column winner, if it's a Sarukian Dariush winner. I'll say this, that would be very impressive if he could, because that would be 5 title defenses. 2 to a featherweight in Volkanovski, but one of them was legit. 1 to the VMF, 1 to the guy he took the belt from, and that would probably maybe even have some people convinced he's the greatest lightweight ever. Now remember, his mentor and teammate Habib never lost, but he only got the 3 title defenses. Makhachev would be at 5. What are your thoughts?
Okay, something that you said early on, one of those would be legit. You're talking about Volkanovski. Here's my issue with that. And this is why I don't like these matchups. At the end of the day, how legit is it? It's still a lightweight against a featherweight, right? Like, to me, I would have him just rather taken out a solid lightweight. I think that helps his resume a little bit more. With Volkanovski, as great as he is, he's still a featherweight. You know, even though he competed.
He was deserving of it. Volkanovski was deserving of it, though, that shot.
Are you, though? Like, I mean, you skip a line of an entire division.
Well, because he cleared out his.
It was fun.
He only had 1 loss in his career. He had 4 title defenses. So if you were ever going to do it, maybe then was the time. Maybe it wasn't right for Makhachev at that time because he just became champ. So his first title defense shouldn't be.
Right.
A guy moving up. I get that. But
and you know, don't Australia, gain much.
It was the right time for Makhachev. I didn't hold that against him. It was that rematch that really bugged me.
But you don't really gain much out of it if you're him. You're supposed to win that fight. In fact, you're supposed to do what you did in the second fight. Finish him. Right? Yeah. Those are the type of things that you have to kind of nitpick when you're talking about greatest of all time and all that. I want to see him against lightweights, and I think that plan that was laid out, yeah, that would be pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Well, but do you think he'd be greater than Habib if he could get a 3-0 year in 2024? He'd have 5 title defenses. He'd have 1 loss on his record. So 1 more than Habib, but 2 more title defenses than Habib.
I think it kind of evens out, to be honest. The 1 loss and the 2 more title defenses kind of just even things out.
Mm-hmm. Tony Ferguson's DUI charge has been dismissed. He gets probation on reckless driving. Man, I'm telling you, look, I'm not hating on it, right? I'm just wondering if that happened to me, if I could pull that off. I don't know if that cost him a lot of money or if the courts are bogged down with other stuff and this is what they decided, but geez, it was all on tape. He was, you know, under the influence. He clearly crashed. He didn't hurt no one. That was the good thing. What do you think? I'm going to pretend this was his first one ever, but I think he was maybe even a little threatening towards the cops or something like that, I heard, when they took him back to, you know, to go through the arrest process. But does this bother you at all?
It bothers me in the sense that I just don't understand. Like, to me, the punishment seems like somebody just went, hey, you, come on now, you don't do that again. We shouldn't go through that process. Like, we already should know we shouldn't be doing that. That's why you get thrown with a penalty afterwards, right? This to me seems like it's just kind of like a little bit of a scolding on something that is very serious and that you should already know going in, right? Tony Ferguson is going to go, wait, so driving and drinking, I can't do that? He's not going to do that. He knows that. Everybody knows that. That's why for some of us, the penalty is pretty severe. Now, trust me, man, I'm not trying to throw the book at Tony Ferguson, but if you're going to ask me that question, I'm more of a guy that wants to see consistency across the board. And I, like you said, I don't know if that happens to me. I don't know if that happens to you.
I've driven drunk before. Huge mistake. But I never hit other cars and I was never on video. That's why I would have thought my goose was cooked if that was me. And if I could get out of it, holy cow, you know. But
yeah,
hey, just as hopefully Tony learns from this and doesn't do it again. Tony's a very, very polarizing figure in many ways. You know, he had that incident years ago that obviously it looks like him and his family are doing well now. The six losses, though, you know, back then it was like, well, yeah, bad shit stuff is going on, but he's winning. And now he's got those losses and what we always hope for, at least me as a fan and B, a media member, is that these fighters go out there, do their thing, and hopefully make enough money so that they, A, never have to work again if they're lucky enough to do so. Usually you don't want that, though. A 30-year-old, a 35-year-old, a 40-year-old still needs to get occupied. And so what you hope is they set themselves up so that they can do something in the future, you know, in some sort of capacity and be comfortable for the risks that they took. That I definitely would like to see. Something like this, you know, a DUI, folks, can sometimes keep you out of countries. Why would you want that, right? Yeah. So that's just maybe a public service announcement. Don't make the mistake I've made. Don't make the mistake Tony Ferguson made. How I never got a DUI is incredible. Anybody that wants to run my record, I swear by that. But I'll admit to you, I have driven drunk. Huge, huge mistakes. And I've known people that have really, really messed up their lives, whether at the moment or whatever. And so that's just something. There's zero excuse for it because of all the studies that have been done. Dude, some people didn't even wear their seatbelts in the 80s and they would drive drunk. And so we went through seatbelts and driving drunk. And so now with Uber, you know, and the fact that more people are open about it, you call a buddy, they're going to bust your balls and go, are you fucking for real? Oh, what do they say? They pause for half a second and go, all right, don't move. Put the keys on the driver's side or on the passenger side. And just hang back. I'll be right there. They'll give you a hard time for the next few weeks. You owe me lunch. You're an asshole. You're drunk. This, that, whatever. But I don't know anyone that'll tell someone else, you can do it. We're all aware. And so just ask someone, man. Ask someone. Or don't put yourself in the position and just Uber there to begin with. That way you have to Uber home. But anyway. All right. Let's get on out of here. Thank you all, as always, for the support of the show. And for tuning in, we got another show headed your way on Thursday. We got two big fight cards coming up. We'll be talking about that. The UFC fight card in Austin. Bobby Green does have an opponent, by the way, in case you're wondering. It's Jalen Turner. He steps in for Dan Hooker. Main event, Armin Sarukian versus Benil Dariush. So two great fights at 155 pounds. And then also, don't forget about BKFC 56 with Todd Duffy and Ben Rothwell in the co-main event. And then Mike Perry and Eddie Alvarez in the main event. So they came pretty strong. Oh, Christine Ferreira, she fights Beck Rawlings. So I think they came pretty strong, did BKFC. So hopefully you guys tune into that. I think those fights are going to be great.
Yeah,
we're out of here. Enjoy the rest of your week. Go out and be a champion.